Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Fringe Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Chris Hutton. Before we get into the news, a quick word from our sponsor, Hideco Energy. Are you tired of skyrocketing electricity bills and the new phenomenon of load reduction? Meet Hideco Energy, South Africa's trusted Tier 1 premium solar and backup power solutions supplier. With over 100 years of trading experience and the backing of a publicly listed company, Hideco Energy brings you the best quality international products to power your home or business reliably. From 3 kilowatt single-phase systems to 250 kilowatt three-phase solutions, we've got options for every need. And here's the best part, they offer unbeatable financing and rent-to-own packages designed to lower the barriers to saving money, cutting electricity costs, and ensuring power stability regardless of what's happening at Eskom or your local municipality's electricity supplier. Right now, we're thrilled to offer Daily Friend listeners an exclusive promotion. Book a business or household audit for free, and they'll show you how to put money back into your pocket without hefty upfront costs. Reach out to them at sales@hudacoenergy.co.za. That's at hudacoenergy.co.za, or call them on 011-447-9864. Hideco Energy, sustainable power and storage solutions provider. Right, let's get into our first news story, and this is talking about, well, I guess it follows from the matric results, and that is that university campuses are expecting a huge number of applications for first-year positions at university. And this kind of shows, I think, the crisis in our education, how many South Africans are desperate to improve their education so that they can have a better shot at securing themselves into the middle class, at getting out of poverty, at making sure that they have a good paying job going forward. There were 337,000 matrics approximately who received a bachelor's degree pass from their matrics. From the matric exams, but there are only 202,000 first-year places available across all 26 public university institutions. News 24 spoke to 19 institutions, and they were told that they received 4.2 million applications for only 131,000 first-year places, which is absolutely insane mismatch in terms of supply and demand. You know, all the big famous universities, University of Johannesburg, Cape Peninsula University of Technology, Northwest University, UCT, they all receive vast numbers of applications, and many, many of those students are just simply not going to be placed. So why are students so desperate to get into university? Well, part of it is because people want to further their education just generally. They think it will improve their earning potential. But part of it is because this is, once again, another knock-on effect of our high unemployment rate. People are desperate to get any advantage they could possibly get in the workplace, in the employment market, because if you don't have a university degree, you're very likely to be at risk of joining the around 40% of South Africans who are not able to find work. And that is a very scary prospect indeed. And so you're going to have hundreds of thousands, not millions of people seeing if they can get their way into university. To make matters worse, a very significant number of those placed in first year will not make it to second year, often because the education they got in high school was not of a quality sufficient enough to actually get them through the system. Also, there's lots of financial constraints and difficulties that come with university. So, you know, maybe you can afford the first year of university, but then your finances dry up. NASFAS doesn't pay out its money, or something else goes wrong, and suddenly you find you're not able to complete your education and you're in debt for a degree you'll never have. Very frustrating, very depressing stuff. But Chris, I guess this means, you know, we have to tackle this problem in a number of ways, I suppose. But one of them is surely improving the job market and also just investing in building more universities. Do you agree with me? What do you make of this story?
So two things. You mentioned supply and demand, and with anything, I mean, economics, it's not confined to economics. Economics, you know, permeates everything. But if you're talking about supply and demand, if you have regulations, policies, ways of managing the education sector broadly, so tertiary, secondary, et cetera, if those are policies and ideas in place that restrict demand, the restrict supply that can be given to a high demand area such as education, you're going to see these sorts of shortages and constraints. So number one, that's one thing to consider. And we go back to a few years ago with former President Zuma and the promises around quote unquote free education, all that sort of stuff. And then you create these expectations as government, you create these expectations amongst your citizenry. Why wouldn't there be enough places? Government has been telling us for years that there will be enough for all of us. So why can't we go to university? Why does NSFAS have funding issues? Why shouldn't there just be money available for quote unquote free education? So it's also about setting and managing expectations as government. Of course, there are very perverse incentives in that regard, as we've seen in many instances where government promises freebies in the case of electioneering, but then can't actually deliver that and then has to deal with the consequences. In some cases, they can avoid the consequences. Just a second point, maybe around society more broadly, the sort of expectations, or I'm not sure how to describe it exactly, but what we set up in terms of how we measure whether people have succeeded or failed. And in many cases, it's they've gone to university and they've got a BCom, you know, a 3-year, 4-year degree, where technical colleges that played a very important role have also been gutted largely, sort of managerially, administratively, financially. The very viable routes for upskilling, for finding employment for South Africans that those sorts of institutions could also provide are part of the broader education picture. It's not a case of just a 3 or 4 year degree in finances or in, politics, philosophy, et cetera, et cetera. Looking at what are we doing with our technical skills development institutions that are preventing South Africans from buying into that as a viable career path, a way for them to attain skills, to put food on the table for themselves, for their families, and to also just, you know, build up the sort of communities that they want to see. We've got a dearth of many hard skills in the country, but then we're not fixing the sort of pipeline or the supply side of it. So different, I think, avenues to explore in that regard. It is a very complicated picture. I don't want to make out that it's just, you know, fix it overnight, but there are key points that I think we need to really start focusing on, because as you say, the 40% unemployment rate, we're not equipping young South Africans with the skills they need to compete, never mind domestically, but internationally.
Right. Now, there's many aspects to this. I like that you brought up the expectations part of the equation, because, of course, I think you can directly trace the sort of radicalness and rage that you see in parties like the EFF in particular, but also to some degree, I think other political parties in South Africa, to the fact that a lot of people, particularly those who were kind of emerging into the middle class from poverty, had their expectations dashed. There were way too many promises that the ANC was either never going to be able to fulfill or messed up the fulfillment of those promises. And as a result, that breeds a lot of resentment, particularly, I think, amongst these kind of people who are, trying to establish themselves, who do see themselves as having it's actually an elite, essentially, that manages to even get to go to university. Lots of people don't make it that far. They don't get the marks in matric. They don't finish matric. They don't even imagine that they're going to have the money, and they're not able to get NASA's funding. Those kind of things all stand in the way of getting to university. So the people who go to university, I think, very often believe we've made it. They think that they're now on the track to the middle class. And now, with so few places available, many of them are going to realize that actually this is not the last bridge to cross. And that can breed a lot of resentment, which sort of political parasites and charlatans can feed off of in a very nasty way, which is terrible for the country. But also, I think, you know, something causing problems for that dearth of those technical skills is, you look at where jobs have grown in South Africa, and it's places like finance. It's because government policy has so much strangled so much of the economy, the more manufacturing jobs, the things that people might end up doing if they went to a technical college. And so everyone says, well, the only way to get a good paying job is to go for those sort of softer skills, to hope that you can get into business, to be some kind of, you know, business hustler, or to get a job in a finance sector or something like that. And, you know, we can't employ the whole country in the finance sector anytime soon. So many issues to sort out. And I think we really here see the intersection of education policy and economic policy and the misery it causes in millions of people's lives. Okay, let us move on to a very connected story, in a sense, to this crisis, the economic stuff I was talking about, and that is the news that's been discussed for the last week that ArcelorMittal South Africa is preparing to shut down its long steel production at the end of the month, with about 3,500 employees affected. However, there's fears that up to 100,000 jobs sort of downstream from this could be affected. The steelmaker will continue to produce flat steel products for the market. However, this business is also suffering under cheap imports. So, you know, there's one argument here, Chris, that we should just put up lots of tariffs and we should add subsidies to the business, and that'll just fix everything. I mean, firstly, it's a question as to whether that's actually affordable. But secondly, the reason that our businesses are not able to compete with cheap imports is because the cost of doing business in South Africa is so high. What do you make of this story?
No, exactly right. And I want to dismiss easily the impact of, for example, cheap Chinese steel, automobiles. We're seeing the impact on European car manufacturers like Volkswagen, you know, is the first one that jumps to mind because of those cheaper imports. But in South Africa's case, if you think of it like a pyramid, if the base of the pyramid, your things like a logistics system that functions, your ports, your railways, your electricity supply, crime, the further up you go, then you get to, you know, your more pie in the sky things like smart cities and 6G connecting everyone through microchips and all that stuff. If your base of the pyramid isn't solid, then you're not going to see even well-established businesses doing well, because they have to put in so much extra from whatever revenue they do bring in or profits in terms of shoring up the failures that a government should provide. So again, electricity, water supply really coming to the fore lately in the last year or two, and crime issues. So they have to expend much more in that regard. If you also take just the wider picture, we talked about in our first story, things like manufacturing and construction. If you think about the long-term development for some of these sectors in South Africa, according to the CEO of AMSA, Kobus Verster, he mentioned that domestic steel consumption was 30% lower last year than it had been 8 years ago. If you look at, for example, in 2023, the manufacturing sector contributed 25% of the country's GDP. In the 1980s, that was around, in 2023, contributed 12%. In the 1980s, it was 25%. So the bigger picture, a longer term decline, and not doing the necessary policy interventions to fix these issues that were always coming down the line. It's just a given. So you can provide more subsidies, you can put up tariffs on imports. It doesn't fix the supply side or the domestic picture, the domestic policy picture, to ensure that those companies like AMSA and others can compete. Those more well-established companies do have some of the additional revenue, so they could still persist for a while. But especially for emerging competition and new players, and we talk about job creation, we talk about the education picture, there's just not those opportunities. I should also just mention Minister Park Tau of the DTIC. The government has talked about in the last 2 weeks their concerns around AMSA and what, you know, that they're trying to intervene and deal with the situation as best they can. The minister said, and I quote, "While the immediate task will be addressing structural issues affecting AMSA's long steel business, the broader focus should also be on addressing productivity improvements and supply chain efficiencies, investments in low carbon technologies, competitiveness, and regaining market share." I think just that little bit alone shows you that the sentiment is there, but that's way too open-ended and not targeted enough in terms of policy interventions, what you're going to do to actually alleviate and fix the situation, to ensure that it's not just a short-term like plaster on a wound, but you're fixing the deeper issues that contributed to the situation. And just a very last note. Of course, the economic impact and the job losses aren't just confined to steel, for example, or manufacturing. Given how AMSA is important for sectors like agriculture, construction, if you look at automobile manufacturing, how some of those companies like Volkswagen, Toyota are so important in South Africa, they rely on those. Now they can import those products, but of course, globally, should prices increase, that means it affects their business operations and their bottom line. So it's a very concerning signal, I think. And if you take it all in the context of people like President Ramaphosa and Minister of Public Works, Dean McPherson, talking about turning the country into a construction site, you need steel. for that. So let's see what more can come from this, actual policy reforms and interventions. But yeah, it's a very good opportunity for the GNU to show an acknowledgement of reality and that they're serious about implementing the necessary reforms.
Exactly right. We don't have time if we want to see the country succeeding and we want to see the government of national unity actually making some real differences in the country to just sort of muck about on the margins. The sugar high, as you've often called it, Chris, is very much over. And the economic news so far has not been amazing, to say the least. So it's time for real changes. And so far, I think the ANC has been sluggish in doing that, preoccupied with its own internal conflicts and machinations, which is an attitude that needs to change, because otherwise we're going to be in an even worse position very soon. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. If you do enjoy our show, please do like the video. Please do subscribe to us on whatever platform you are listening to us. And we hope you have a wonderful day. That's a wrap.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.